It is that time. Good morning, good morning, good morning, beautiful people of Middle Tennessee, of Nashville, Tennessee, wherever it is that you are streaming. 104.5 The Zone. Good morning to Facebook Live, to Periscope, to YouTube, and Twitch TV as well on 104.5 The Zone TV. The praise pouring in, Lucas, in the comment section. Oh, goodness. I see everybody commenting, scrolling in. Dawn is hot. The people on the YouTube audience are enjoying the fact that Dawn Davenport of 3HL just ripped me up and down for my taste in music. Tune in from 3 to 6 to hear her and Brent Doherty, of course, go on at sure. I'm sure she's not done complaining about me today here on the radio. Terry Randolph on Facebook says, Buck is a Vols fan. He's got that off-orange shirt on, or maybe a faded Hoosier shirt, about the same either way. And I've got a salmon-colored cut-off hoodie today. Ramon Foster told me it's salmon.
Yeah, so we'll I was going to say pink, but it's salmon.
Pink
confirmed.
Salmon. Pink salmon, same thing. 615-737-1045. We also have people tweeting in at us, and you can vote on the polls, by the way, at Buck Rising on Twitter. Teresa Walker of the Associated Press is egging Dawn on. She wants to see blood. Appreciate you, Teresa. Thank you for your participation. Lebowski says, I just heard Dawn demand that Buck download a full Tupac album and listen to the stories told. That's a quote. That's what I'm talking about, Dawn. Educate this man. Also, I am shocked to learn that we are apparently in our 60s. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, who over the age of 35 says download an album? What the hell is an album? When's the last time you've listened to a full album, Lucas?
Last year, I kind of started trying to do that a little more often.
Really?
Yeah, like listening from start to finish, kind of the way that they're supposed to be listened to.
I think the last time I did that was Beyonce's Lemonade album. I'm gonna look up when that was, because that's not terribly recent. That's been, like, Becky with the Good Hair's been a minute.
I listened to, like, Greta Van Fleet's new album from start to finish over the course of the last 5 or so days.
All right, so Beyonce's Lemonade album, 2016. That's the last time I listened to a full album start to finish. It's only because a friend of mine who works in music told me, listen to this album start to finish. It tells the story of Jay-Z cheating on Beyonce. I was like, oh, this has got a little TMZ to it.
It's juicy stuff.
Exciting. Cousin Justin Brinkley tweets in, I sure hope Buck is doing this to get a rise out of Dawn, because a normal parent to have a child Buck's age would be in their early to mid-50s. Dawn just had a baby. If he's serious, it's time to have a discussion about menopause when women go through it. What? Lucas just hit puberty. I don't want to talk about menopause. What do we know about menopause?
Let's move on, man.
Oh, 615-737-1045. So the Vols. Orange and white game coming up this weekend. I think, like, all of the whole J. Martin Ramon family is going to be there, yeah? All of them
are going.
They'll
be there. Yeah, they'll be outside Neyland Stadium.
Like, doing the radio show? Are they going to the game? What are they doing?
I'm not positive.
Okay. Anyway, Josh Heupel was on their radio show today. Obviously, it was Mike Keith in for Jason Martin, who is at home resting with his wife and his newborn. Congratulations again to them. But Josh Heupel, head coach of the Tennessee Vols, was on this morning, and Mike Keith asked him a question, because there's a lot of stuff to talk about with the Vols, right? There's obviously a lot of different storylines. By the way, Austin Berlage of Power T Tape coming up next. We're going to get into the X's and O's of what we should be looking for, even though an orange and white spring game, probably not the most schemed up of scrimmages. But what Mike Keith asked Josh Heupel this morning really, really stuck out to me, because Mike had an opinion on it that I found interesting. And also, you know, I would never slander the GOAT Mike Keith, given that I've already come after Dawn Davenport for her age. I'm just racking up a hit list of likable figures in Nashville sports media this morning, it seems. But what Heupel said to Mike's question, do we have Mike's question or just Heupel's answer? Just Heupel. Okay, so let's hear Josh Heupel when Mike Keith asked him about the theme of positivity that Heupel and his staff have tried to bring and make sure is embedded in the foundation of the Tennessee Vols football program.
You know, guys that are playing at this level, they're not trying to mess up. You know what I mean?
Right.
The vast majority of them want to be pleasers. They want to try to do things the right way. I think it's imperative that coaches are really clear in what the standards and what you want are. And, you know, so that's what we try to do here early. I think building positive momentum through those experiences, showing players how they are improving, guys that are taking huge strides from practice to practice or during the course of a certain part of your offseason is really important to creating positive energy. Rewarding the positive is really important with this generation. And in doing that, you're creating positive momentum. I think it's important that we do that with our former VFLs, that they understand that, man, they built this place. Their legacy lives on. We're walking in those footsteps now. I'm fortunate that I get to be the torchbearer of this program right now. I want those guys to be back, to be able to be with our position coaches, talk to our players, give back as they've learned from their experiences once they've left here. I think it's important that our current players see that this is a lifelong journey of being a Tennessee football player, that it's not just a four-year process. And all those things parlay into recruiting well and creating positive momentum outside of this program. I wanted to be here because this is one of the great traditions in college football. It's got a passionate fan base, and you have the tools to go chase and win championships. And we got to create that positive momentum to continue to build this program the right way, go recruit elite players, and then develop them and let them go cut it loose and play on Saturdays.
So that's Josh Heupel, head coach of the Tennessee Vols. The thing that stood out to me was the start of the answer. They're not trying to screw up, so you want to be positive with them if they do. So here's what Mike said this morning. And by the way, go listen to the Jay Mart and Ramon podcast, wherever it is that you get your podcast, and hear what the Mike Keith, Ramon Foster, Josh Heupel interview for yourselves, because as a Vols fan, certainly you'll enjoy it, because it's a lot of positivity, right? It's a lot of positivity about the Vols. And I understand, I 100% understand the need for what Josh Heupel is expressing, right? If you take, there are going to be hard conversations had, there is going to be hard coaching, for sure. But when you're dealing with young men, what Heupel is, at least that's how I'm taking it, right? What Heupel is saying in that quote to me, how I'm processing it, is these guys are learning. We're learning with them. We want to make sure that we positively reinforce them so that we are coaching them up, but not tearing down their confidence in the process. Because if you are to believe things like ESPN's Football Power Index, where the Tennessee Vols are down amongst the ranks, like down in the 60s and 70s in terms of the Football Power Index around programs like Appalachian State, these guys are going to need some kind of confidence to believe that they are legitimate football players for the University of Tennessee, because nothing that I am getting, that I am preparing myself for, is not going to be a pleasant experience. Like, they are not in a position right now to play winning football. I don't say that to bash the university. I don't say that to bash Josh Heupel, nor the players. I'm just looking at how much they are up against. And yes, there will be moments that are galvanizing, moments that they can look back on as they build this thing under Heupel, assuming he is allowed the proper time and given the proper tools to legitimately build Tennessee football up, which is, of course, the goal. I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, I understand why a lot of Vols fans, because what Mike Keith said was basically it's refreshing to hear somebody have a positive take on the University of Tennessee. And I don't disagree with him. I'm sure Vols fans are so sick and tired of being mocked. Because that's what happens across the SEC, across college football, the University of Tennessee, whether it's the coaching search after Butch Jones, whether it was the Butch Jones experience, whether it's the McDonald's bags, securing the bag, Jeremy Pruitt, recruiting violations, whatever it is, real or imagined, people make fun of Tennessee football. And so what Heupel is trying to avoid there, or at least trying to avoid for the sake of these young men's confidence, is them being made to feel as if they are a part of the joke, when that's not what Vols fans know, that's not what Vols fans feel, that's not what Vols fans historically have grown up with their program being. They are not a laughingstock. The history tells a much different story. But the reality of the situation for Heupel and this team is that they are not in a position to succeed inherently. I'm not holding that against them. And I understand why Josh Heupel is taking that approach. I'm just looking for reality. I'm looking for somebody to tell me just how good the University of Tennessee is capable of being next year, given the roster attrition, given that we still don't know what is going to be happening with NCAA violations, given what we still don't know about Josh Heupel's capabilities at this level. Recruiting leaves something to be desired. Lucas, if I'm not mistaken, there hasn't been anything that's been hugely galvanizing for the University of Tennessee with Heupel, understanding the time that he was hired is not ideal for the recruiting cycle. But there's been nothing there that would supremely galvanize the fan base. In fact, when I called you this morning and told you to look up the FPI on ESPN, the Football Power Index, to see where the Vols were, what was your reaction?
Behind Ball State, behind Coastal Carolina, behind who won 11 games last year, who you actually make a great argument about, behind a lot of teams, just kind of buried down the list. But the thing about the positivity that bothers Tennessee fans is, and it's not Josh Heupel or Danny White's fault. Of course, they're going to come in and try to preach positivity. They're coming into a new role. But Tennessee fans, it's been so bad for so long. I think the mindset is, don't preach to me positivity when none of it is actually positive.
48th. That's where ESPN's Football Power Index ranks the Tennessee Volunteers. So I was a little dramatic on the front end. But still, a top 50 team, a top 50, not a top 15, not a top 5, a top 50 team in college football.
But you, so you see what Heupel's doing, though. Like, it makes sense.
Oh, sure.
It's been so negative for the...
I'm not mad at him.
Right.
No, I'm not mad at him for trying to upsell his position. But I want to learn more than what Josh Heupel is essentially selling us. I have been sold the University of Tennessee plenty of times. You, as Vols fans, have been sold a bill of goods with the University of Tennessee plenty of times. You are tired of dealing in off-season unrealistic expectation. You want results.
But he's in a tough spot because he's in a spot where he has to sell the program. He has to be positive for recruiting. But also in the mindset of fans, it's tell us, no, we need to fix this. Things are not good and it needs to be fixed. Not everything is positive. We're headed in the right direction. Everything is good. That's kind of how he has to operate, but that's just not what people want to hear outside of recruits. It's a really tough spot to be in.
Right. You want to know, or at least from my perspective, and I feel like, and I don't want to speak for the majority of the audience. If you feel differently, call in 615-737-1045, or you can interact with us in the chat. I see plenty of people in there sending us comments on Facebook Live, on Twitter, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Feel free to do so. What we'll talk about coming up next is the actual X's and O's of the orange and white game, the actual X's and O's of what Josh Heupel is probably going to be running, and how this fifth quarterback, this transfer portal quarterback that the University of Tennessee added to an already crowded position room, is going to affect this quarterback competition. All that and more with Austin Burlage, Power T Tape. That's what's coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. A little funky on a Tuesday. Happy birthday to the great one, Luther Vandross. Lucas got it coming in steamy. I like it. Oh, do we have Stephen A.? Can Stephen A. wish Luther Vandross a happy birthday? Are we capable of doing those things
happy
at once?
Happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
But we do care.
So
we
harsh. Care. Yeah, you know, Stephen A., lighten up a little bit. Happy birthday, Luther Vandross. Anyway, Austin Burlage, Power T Tape, is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. The Vols, the orange and white game, coming up on Saturday. J. Martin Ramon, the whole crew going to be out there in Knoxville. Should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, Austin, first and foremost, good morning. And secondly, what the hell are they doing with this fifth quarterback? Explain to me the saga, the genesis of Joe Milton and why he's in Knoxville.
Yeah, good morning, Buck. It's good to be on. You know, I was listening last night to you on your sports primetime, and somebody was going at you for being long-winded. So it's good to be able to give you somebody else to talk to here.
Yes, it is. It is helpful. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hey, anything for you, buddy. What's going on with Joe Milton? I really think this only makes sense if you have some sort of advanced knowledge that at least one, and I would guess maybe even two of the current quarterbacks are not going to be with the team in the fall, because there's an open competition at quarterback right now. Everybody knows it, and we're going to run into the same problem that we had last year, which is how do you get enough reps for a guy to be prepared with the first unit? You know, that was the big issue with last year. It was, well, we had to prepare one of the three, and it ended up being Garantano because the experience and the lack of turnovers, and we saw how that turned out. So, you know, I just don't think that you can carry five scholarship quarterbacks into a fall and get them enough equal reps to really have a feel of who's the best one that separates from the pack.
So then the question becomes, who is the name? Who goes, do you think, in your opinion? Now, I understand there's been very, very little that the Knoxville media has been able to see. Obviously, this is just spring football, so it's difficult to discern, really, how much one player has an advantage over the other than just pure comfort level when they're out there throwing to the wide receivers. But at this point, who makes the most sense to be on that list of names that they could potentially move on from?
Yeah, you know, in my opinion, I'm going to say it's Harrison Bailey, just because, you know, despite being a five-star, I don't know if he has the strongest arm on the team, and I don't know if he has the mobility that they might be looking for. I don't think in this offense you need to have an incredibly mobile guy, but somebody that can get around the pocket a little bit more than maybe Harrison can. And I don't have any advanced knowledge, anything sure like that. I'm just speculating. But I'm wondering about that. Obviously, too, the Salter situation still hasn't been resolved, and we haven't seen him. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say he's going to go or not go, but what I am going to say is he's missed the spring as an early enrollee now, and that certainly doesn't bode well for him. So, you know, that's kind of where I would think, but obviously I'm not there every day, so I can't make any certain claims there.
No question. Just speculative, reckless speculation. Yeah. That's what we're doing here this morning.
Correct. That's what we do here.
That's okay. Milton, obviously familiar with Josh Heupel. He was offered by Missouri while Heupel was there as the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach. I don't know, have you had time to study him at this point, Austin, based on his time at Michigan? Obviously, his greatest moment of success was against my Indiana Hoosiers, so I remember him well. But does this strike you as somebody who can push for starting reps, or do you think this is more of a rotational player, a depth player? What exactly are the Vols looking at here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have had time to watch him a little bit since yesterday. They kind of came out and made the announcement, and he did put on a show against your Hoosiers. I didn't want to bring it up, but since you brought it up, was probably his biggest game.
Right.
You know, I think one thing that I think I really like about the move is he does have 3 years of eligibility remaining, which is really good if you think of it as like a developmental depth kind of guy, you know. But that doesn't seem like, you know, adding a quarterback before spring's really even over, you can, you know, it kind of seems like we're trying to have a guy step in now. Maybe we're not confident with the guys we have now. So, you know, he's a big guy, 6'5", 245. He's got a huge arm. That's what everybody says about him. They love his natural skills. You know, he can take hits. He's a decent runner. But my question with him and how it fits into the offense, and we can talk about the offense in a second too, is just, you know, how accurate can he be? In high school, and I know it's just high school, but he did play in Florida, which has a really good quality of high school football. He never had a completion percentage above 50% in 3 years. And then when he got to college, his career completion percentage at Michigan is 56.6%. So, you know, accuracy is one of these things with quarterbacks where it doesn't really you kind of are what you are. You're either an accurate passer or you're not. And I'm not to say that you can't develop a little bit here and there, but it's very difficult to go from an inaccurate passer to an accurate passer. And I just wonder with what we want to do with the Heupel offense, it's going to focus on a lot of deep down the field throws where you have to be accurate with the football because you're throwing it deep and outside the numbers. I just don't know if he's the guy that has that. And he reminds me a lot in that way of Hendon Hooker. Like, we already have a guy on the team that is pretty mobile, pretty big arm and can run, but we don't really know about the accuracy there.
Austin Burlidge is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. You can follow him at @power_T_tape.
Austin, what you said right there about, like Hendon Hooker, he's pretty mobile. You don't really know yet what he can do with his arm. But just how important is that from what you've seen with this offense? You said Harrison Bailey may be the most likely guy to go because he's the least mobile. Numbers show, though, that quarterbacks under Josh Heupel haven't always been the most mobile. Drew Locke doesn't exactly run it around. Mackenzie Milton's rushing numbers were cut in half when Heupel took over at UCF from 600 rush yards to 300 rush yards. So it feels like it's this balance of there's not going to be like designed runs for the quarterbacks, but they have to be mobile. They have to be able to scramble and escape. How do you view it from what you've seen of Heupel's offenses?
Yeah, I think that's the difficulty of using the word mobile, is because I think when you use the word mobile, people assume like you're going to scramble around back there like Mike Vick.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, you do have to be able to, you're going to play from the pocket a lot in the Heupel offense, and you have to be able to get out of the pocket when and if it collapses. So you're not going to be a statue back there. And just thinking back to maybe, you know, the Chaney offense or even what he did at Georgia with Jake Fromm, you know, he was more always in the pocket. He was never really looking to run. And that, I think, fit Harrison pretty well, you know. But with the Heupel offense, despite not having a ton of designed quarterback runs, he will do a lot of read stuff with the quarterback. He even did it with Drew Locke. And you have to have enough mobility to get away from the pocket and create plays on the run that way. So, that's kind of where that's coming from in terms of using the word mobility, not necessarily like a pure dual threat scrambler. And Milton was a pro style guy and coming out. So yeah, you don't need this elite runner, but you do have to have enough mobility to get away.
All right. So the orange and white game, the spring game for the Tennessee Vols, it is coming up this weekend, April the 24th at Neyland Stadium. Very exciting because it means we're just one step closer in this footballless wasteland to getting back to football. Austin, I guess I don't know how much we'll see from a scheme perspective in these scrimmage games. So rarely do they actually scheme things up rather than just running general plays and trying to get a gauge of where players are, how they mix up together, whether it's different manipulations of the offensive line, looking at different pieces, working in conjunction with other pieces. But what do you expect from this spring game, or how will you be evaluating it based on what you are trying to learn?
Yeah, so they will, obviously, with installing an entirely new system, it's going to be pretty basic, but the principles of what we're trying to do are still going to be there. So, you know, I'm really watching for the pace. That's been the biggest thing with this offense. You know, they don't actually have a playbook from what I've been able to gather. I mean, there's some stuff out there, but it's not, there's nothing like formally down. It's not a ton of plays. So how well are you executing the plays that we have? Alignment is the biggest thing. So with the offense, you'll notice it's spread to the extreme. So you've got receivers that are, you know, 4 yards from the sideline, and how are we aligning correctly? And that's going to affect how well the plays are running. You know, there's another podcast out there that was speaking about maybe the Vols weren't as successful in their scrimmage on what was that, Saturday, offensively. I just wonder, you know, is it because they're not executing correctly, or maybe the spacing's bad because they're not aligning well, letting the defense get good, you know, better looks at what they're trying to do. So I'm, from an offensive standpoint, more looking at that. Just are we aligning correctly? Are we running at the pace that we're supposed to be doing? And are we keeping the penalties down? Because that's one thing that's going to really kill the offense, is if you can get this kind of offense into a second and long, and definitely third and long, obviously you become more one-dimensional, and it's easy to prepare your pressure looks and stuff on third down defensively against it. So are we staying ahead of the chains? And that was a thing that Heupel's team had difficulty with last year, were penalties. I think they were one of the top penalized teams in the country. So, those kinds of things.
Defensively, by the way, Austin Burlidge, @power_T_tape here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Make sure you give him a follow. Great breakdowns available to you there. Defensively, we know the struggles. We know the lack of depth, especially at inside linebacker. What are you going to be looking for on that side of the ball, and who the hell is going to play linebacker on Saturday?
It sounds like anybody and everybody is going to play linebacker. I think what I'm most looking forward to, because we're going to run our offense versus our defense, and what our offense is really trying to do is create big splits, and then what that's going to end up doing is forcing one-on-ones. And so what I'm really looking forward to is who's winning the one-on-ones and why. One guy that the defense has talked a lot about and other people that have been able to watch practice have talked a lot about is Byron Young, edge rusher. And so my question is, okay, is Byron Young just really, really looking good, or is he maybe matched up with, one of Tennessee's tackles one-on-one all the time, and he's just better than that tackle, but maybe he's not, he's not winning the same way that you would expect, like we need to win against Florida, Georgia, Alabama, that kind of thing. So I'm really interested into the one-on-one matchup and outside at receiver. We return a lot of guys in the defensive secondary, so we think we have some experience there, if not depth. But, one corner is going to be Alante Taylor. Who's the other corner going to be? Is it going to be Warren Burrell? Going to be Kenny George? So I'm looking at that. Can those guys win their one-on-ones with the receivers that we know we have, and how does that look?
So ESPN has the College Football Power Index out right now. Currently, the Tennessee Volunteers, the 48th best team in college football, according to their metrics. A projected win-loss at this point is 6.6 against 5.4. Expected wins versus expected losses. Does that sound like it is going to be accurate for Josh Heupel and his staff in year one? Understanding that we have yet to see barely anything at this point and that largely preseason predictions are useless, what say you?
Yeah, personally, obviously I'm a Tennessee fan. I cover Tennessee. I'm on a radio show. We talk about Tennessee, so I want to pump them up and I want to be positive, but I think being honest is more important right now. And to me, my honest opinion is I think, four wins is more what I see. I think Pitt is a really tough matchup because UCF has played Pitt two out of the last 3 years and Pitt won one. But I just mean that by saying Narduzzi is very familiar with this offense and the pace, not like we're going to surprise him there. And I just think the SEC is really tough. And if you look at Heupel's first year with Missouri, 2016, that was a 4-win team. And I just really think that what this offense is designed to do is to create space and to create one-on-ones, which is great. But the downside of that is, well, what if their guys are better than your guys? And I think that we're going to run into that a lot this year just because the nature of the schedule and the SEC, we're going to play a lot of teams that I just think their guys are going to be better than our guys. And I think when Heupel has run into that, particularly in the SEC, his offense has struggled. He puts up a lot of points against teams that aren't as good, but against the teams that are a little bit better, they struggle to put up points. And that's where, if you look at the top, defensive back recruits, over the last 4 or 5 years, almost all of them of the top 25 end up going to the SEC or Ohio State. So it's one thing to run, a lot of vertical shot one-on-one plays in other conferences, but when you get into the SEC where you have the best of the best at defensive back, it's a little bit tougher.
Austin Burlage at @power_T_tape is where you follow him. Josh Heupel was on this radio station not, 2 hours ago, Lucas? This is about 2 hours ago, and he was preaching positivity. That's much different than we've just heard from Austin Burlage. But we appreciate the realism. We appreciate the analysis. And we appreciate you on social media because you're a great follow. Make sure you're following this man at @power_T_tape. What do you got coming up after the spring game, Austin?
Yeah, I think I'm going to kind of just relax. I coach high school football, so I got my season I'm preparing for a little bit. My wife and I are expecting our first child, so I gotta get the nursery ready.
Congratulations!
So, yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound very restful at all. That sounds incredibly stressful.
Yeah, in my head, it sounded like I would get a rest, and then it came out, and it was like, no, that's actually a lot more work, probably. But
all right, Godspeed. Go be with your family. Thanks for hanging out.
Appreciate you, bro. Thank you,
Austin Burlage. @power_T_tape. Lucas. 4 wins. How you feeling, bud?
I have a hard time really disagreeing with anything he's saying.
You looked at this Football Power Index. I was selling you 6.6. I was selling you 6.6 expected wins according to the Football Power Index.
Over six is hard to picture with this team.
Yeah, but he's going two under.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and he makes a good point about Pitt and the familiarity that Pat Narduzzi will have with this Heupel scheme. And even if, like he said, this offense is able to create space and be explosive, which they will at times this season. I mean, he's proven that. I don't think he's just going to hit a brick wall and forget how to coach offense. He's done it in the SEC. But not only will their guys be better than your guys in terms of Tennessee offense first, SEC defenses, but just what it will do to this Tennessee defense. And this Tennessee defense will improve. It's not going to be the same defense that we're going to see in the spring game on Saturday. They will get guys back. Maybe they'll add somebody in the transfer portal, but it is still such a huge point of concern. So how much is the success of the offense going to victimize Tennessee's defense?
We'll react to that. Coming up next, I want to know what you guys think. 615-737-1045 or in the chat on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and on Twitter. You can interact with the show there. Is four wins acceptable for Josh Heupel in his first year at Tennessee? That's what Austin Burlidge has just alleged. He's having difficulty finding more than four. I want to know how Vols fans feel about it. 615-737-1045. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. Tennessee, ranked 48th in college football by ESPN's Football Power Index. You just heard Austin Burlidge breaks down the tape for Power T-Tape. By the way, Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock. Four wins is what Austin Burlidge sees on the Vols 2021 schedule. I'm looking at it right now. I've asked you guys across all of the platforms, is four wins acceptable for Josh Heupel in year one? Now, whether you think they're capable of winning more is a different question. I want to know whether you think four wins is acceptable. Are you okay with that, understanding everything that Josh Heupel is up against heading into this season? 615-737-1045. Jordan in Atlanta has called in. What's going on, Jordan? We appreciate the call.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, fellas. I just wanted to talk a little bit. I was listening to the interview with Austin. Four wins, I think that should probably be the baseline. Him talking about the Pitt matchup, I think that's probably a toss-up game. But Bowling Green, Tennessee Tech, and then South Alabama should all be wins. I think we could probably win Vandy and South Carolina, and then I believe that probably the two toss-ups are going to be Kentucky and Missouri. Missouri already has their established offense under Drinkwitz, and then Stoops always has pretty darn good defense up there in Kentucky. So I'm excited to see how we match up against them, just knowing that we're coming off a bye, so I think that might give us a little bit of an edge, your chance to get healthy going into Kentucky. So I'm seeing five, maybe six, but I think four should absolutely be the floor for wins.
We appreciate the call, Jordan. Thank you. 615-737-1045. I'm looking at the schedule right now, okay? So you open with Bowling Green. You have Pitt, Tennessee Tech before you start SEC play at Florida on September the 25th. So what Austin Burlidge is saying is basically you're going to win all of your, in theory, you're going to win all of your out-of-conference games, Bowling Green, Pitt, Tennessee Tech, although he did not sound at all optimistic about Pitt, given what he just cited about Pat Narduzzi. So if you are going to take Pitt as a loss, just based on what the schedule looks like right now, you're saying Bowling Green, Tennessee Tech, South Alabama, and one SEC game. One SEC game, whether it's Kentucky or Missouri, whether it's South Carolina or Vandy, three non-conference games, a loss to Pitt, and one SEC game, whether it's an upset at the time, considered an upset or not. It'll be curious to see. Raymond Pfister writes in on Twitch, don't really care about wins. I just want to see a team playing together for a cause. Hell, we don't really have a team. Is that the common train of thought? I mean, Lucas, I feel like I go to you because you are how I gauge the temperature of the Vols fans. All right? And every time I come to you with something about the Vols, you just kind of look at me like, meh, this is what I expect. This is what I have embraced. This is what I have prepared myself physically, mentally, emotionally for. Meh.
It's like what I tell you when it comes to Indiana basketball.
Ugh.
Embrace the suck.
No, there's a difference. The only difference between those two things is the Vols have been relevant sooner than Indiana has.
But, yep. When you look at last season, he's right. That wasn't a team. There's nothing you can point to say that team was together at any point after the 2-0 start.
Yeah, I mean, you'd really have to go back to 2019 for me with the way that Garantano kind of settled into things and kind of, you know, after he had the, I don't want to call it a freak out, but just basically he basically freestyling against Alabama on the QB sneak that shouldn't have been a QB sneak. After Jeremy Pruitt had to basically just get a piece of him, they seemed to really rally around that, around the way that Garantano kind of responded.
They rallied around. There were a few rally points with that run last season that ended in the Gator Bowl. Two seasons ago, right.
Yeah.
Guys like Juwan Jennings and Daniel Batuli at linebacker and Nigel Warrior at safety, Daryl Taylor, the edge rushers. I mean, Daryl Taylor who got drafted, Juwan Jennings who got drafted. Those were the rallying points of that season. I couldn't find a single one last season. And that was disappointing because you had guys like Trey Smith and guys like Bryce Thompson, Trayvon Flowers that were stepping up and saying, no, we need a leader. We don't have a leader. It was like, okay, we'll be a leader. That was the most frustrating thing because it was so evident two seasons ago. Juwan Jennings, like his, and I know leadership is such a cliche that I almost hate using it.
I think that's totally reasonable.
But that spilled out onto the screen when you watch Tennessee football. You didn't have an ounce of that last season, and not from the coaching staff either.
I just put it in my worldview, Titans, right? Given that that's my everyday assignment. Like, Vols, I watch like a fan. Preds, I watch like a fan. Nashville SC, I watch like a fan. Even the Braves now, just so I can have a reason to chirp at Will Bowling during the weeknights. The Grizzlies last night, double overtime, watch it like a fan. That was crazy. Ja Morant and Jokic going back and forth. It's crazy. It's insane to me that somebody who looks like a... Nobody that looks like Jokic should be an NBA
MVP candidate.
MVP. He was a monster. He almost had 50 points. Almost had a 50-point triple-double. Madness. But the Titans, I don't watch like a fan. The Titans I cover because that's my job, right? So Mike Vrabel always talks about there's no cap on leadership ability. You can be a leader as much as you want to be a leader. We're not going to limit any of the guys. We're not going to go to a certain set of guys, a certain designated leadership, even though they do have designated leadership, it is incumbent upon all of the players on the roster, on the practice squad, across the board, to be able to show whatever their measure of leadership is. So what you're saying, because that, you know, Trey Smith is by all accounts, and by everybody who's covered him, everybody who's been around him, played with him, and coached him, has incredibly kind and decent things to say about Trey Smith.
Both. Oh, one of the best ambassadors to come out of that program in the last decade.
Without question. And so his big thing is that he's coming back to the University of Tennessee for his senior season. He's going to forego the draft. He was clearly frustrated by the way the blood clot situation derailed him, and he wanted to make an impact. And then what happened? Tennessee won 3 games. And you hate that. You hate that for those kind of players. It's the biggest difference in football. One player, the strength of one player's skill, one player's leadership, outside of quarterback. Quarterback can cover up a lot. But the NBA, you can make up for a team's deficiencies with one player. Hockey, you can really make up for a team's deficiencies, well, mostly with a goaltender.
Right.
But with one star player. Football's not like that. Football, you need a team. Football, you legitimately need to be able to work together because you are working alongside 10 other guys, 11 people on a field for one team at any given point. Outside of, you know, orange and white game, scrimmage. Vols didn't have that last year.
It was as lifeless as you've seen Tennessee football. And I really do think that includes the 2017 season under Butch Jones. I mean, I think it was right there at that level. I don't know that that was worse, but it was at that level. And for it to go back down to that level only 3 years after with the positivity that the 2019 season ended with was kind of, you know, shocking for Tennessee fans, really bringing them back down to earth a good bit.
I thought you were going to say a different word other than shocking. I thought you were going to say crappy, but not say crappy. That's what it sounded like coming out of your mouth. 615-737-1045. Terry Randolph writes in, dude, Jared is not there anymore. We will win. Jared Garantano's off in Eastern Washington. Terry thinks they're going to the Gator Bowl again to face my mighty Indiana Hoosiers. 23 spots ahead of the University of Tennessee.
If only Jared Garantano was the only problem for Tennessee football last season.
We'll spend some more time on that. We'll see how we'll continue to keep track of things over the course of the week. Obviously, J. Martin Ramon are going to be up at, or I guess east, at the Orange and White game in Knoxville over the weekend. But when we come back, projected season win totals for 2021. All the NFL teams, the Tennessee Titans included, one team ahead of the Titans is going to really, really piss you off. I'm going to tell you who it is and why. Coming up next, I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone.